Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Robert Smith, here with Mike Pesca. The first time in Bryant Park history, there are two male hosts. And you know what I like to do when I'm with a fellow male host?
When you're in the company of men? What is that, Robert?
When I'm in the company of men...
Watch gladiator movies?
The host relationship that shall not speak its name. I like to just, walk and talk with that man, you know, kind maybe of- like... stroll through the morning's news.
Sort of pick the daisies of the news and put them in your basket.
And to stop and smell the fragrant flavor of the part we call the Rambo.
Nice.
I'm trying.
Nice. High gas prices are forcing police departments around the country to change the way they patrol their communities. Here's a little sample of some of the strategies to bring down costs. The Georgia State Patrol asked troopers to reduce driving by 25%. To free up funds to keep its fleet on the road, one South Carolina police department has decided not to fill an open job for a patrol officer. And proposals to restrict the practice of using take-home police cars, I didn't know about that one, are being considered in Delaware, Florida, and Maryland. The plan doesn't sit well with Maryland Sheriff David Goad, who told local officials it's a proven fact, which is my favorite kind of fact, that the sight of a patrol car on the road or in a driveway deters crime. In Newberry, South Carolina, Chief Jack Swindler, who somehow wound up on the right side of the law, isn't sweating the changes. He's telling his officers to turn off the ignition if they are idling for more than a minute and get out and walk. He says that fully outfitted police cars are not a rolling office that you stay in all day.
You know, criminals in South Carolina say, what the heck? We're just going to pay the $4 a gallon and be able to get away from police officers walking.
I found a way to outsmart them.
I'm going to pay for gas. You know, Los Angeles got 18,000 new American citizens in one day, a local record. They all took the oath in three massive swearing-in ceremonies at the L.A. Convention Center yesterday. It was quite a sight. Why so many now? Is this a surge in American pride? Is there something about this country that makes people flock here and want to become citizens on one day? No, they wanted to save some money. You see, last summer, the application fee to become a U.S. citizen jumped from $400 to $675. I think that's actually on the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. You know, we welcome your people who have $675. And it's also partly a response to a public campaign led by a popular Latino radio host, Mexican native Eduardo Piolin Sotelo. Isn't he the Tweety Bird? He told AP that he came to the U.S. hidden in the trunk of a car, and that was 22 years ago. And then he decided to become a U.S. citizen and urged fellow Latinos in Southern California to become citizens. And they did it all in one day, and he did too.
And Miami's also having big ceremonies.
I tell you, everybody wants a bargain. And if you could get, 25% off your U.S. citizenship?
Yeah.
Sold.
One time only. An Israeli tourist says she was fed up, so she stripped off her clothes in front of a road crew of workers in a small town in New Zealand. The woman was on her way to an ATM in the northern community of Kerikeri when road workers began to whistle at her. According to the New Zealand Associated Press, who's like two guys and a Kiwi, she heard the whistles, took off her clothes, used the cash machine, got dressed, and walked away. Later, she told police she felt pestered by the men and thought, "Bugger them, I'll show them what I've got." Police informed her that her behavior was not appropriate in New Zealand.
No, of course not. That's a way to holla back, I guess. New York City has shrunk by 17 square miles, and we're feeling the pain here today. For 20 years, the city's official directory, the Green Book, I have it on my desk as a reporter, has stated that the five boroughs have an area of just about 322 miles.
How could you trust the Green Book? Maybe it's just full of lies.
No, it is not.
Maybe
but
the Commissioner of Transportation is really Irene F. Tannenbaum, not Irene S. Tannenbaum.
Apparently, this unimpeachable source is impeachable because it is wrong. A geographer from the Department of City Planning, Michael S. Miller,
if we can believe the Green Book,
has calculated the number should be 304.8 square miles.
Huh.
And apparently this revised figure is just more accurate measure of how it's always been. You know, what we're all looking for now is what happened to that 17 square miles. I'll tell you where one of the things they found is the islands off of Queens and Jamaica Bay are smaller than once thought.
And they used to draw the lines to include bodies of water, and really, you can't live on a body of water.
But let's be honest. I think we all know the reason why the city has shrunk.
What's
and that
theory?
Is the deflated ego of Rudy Giuliani after his presidential run. It just doesn't need those 17 square miles anymore.
I thought they were just trying to chip away from Vito Fisella's congressional district little by little.
Little by little.
To cover their shame. You know what the biggest city in the United States is in square miles?
You promised you were not going to quiz me on this show. Mm-hmm. I know every co-host has to be quizzed, but go ahead.
It is Anchorage, Alaska. And in the continental U.S., it's Jacksonville, Florida. But one's mostly glacier and the other's mostly swamp. So New York still counts.
We could just get a little of that glacier and swamp around here. We'd get our 17 square miles back.
That is your ramble. Those stories and more on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.